Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, and even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, I think if you're listening to the show, you know that if you use the code CREATIVE, you can get a free month's supply of Blue Chew for only $5 shipping. And Blue Chew's been with Creative Control for a little while now, so I've heard plenty of endorsements from listeners and even friends who have used the code, gotten their free month, and can't stop raving about Blue Chew. The thing about Blue Chew is it isn't just for guys who can't perform, but it's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. And to be frank, if you're tired of being a one-and-done type of guy, Blue Chew can even help your follow-through for round two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Blue Chew is made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And Blue Chew is continuing their special deal for the Creative Control listeners. All you have to do is visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free and use a special promo code CREATIVE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code CREATIVE and try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring Creative Control with Joe Fien. Episode 120 of Creative Control with Joe Feeney. My guest today is a former ECW and NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and of course a 27-time WWE Hardcore
39,
Champion.
39.
I knew you were going to do that because I saw you put that the other day. But you know, they report it wrong on the website then, right? They put you at 27. But 39-time Hardcore Champion, Raven. Raven, how you doing today, my friend?
Good.
Very good, very good. So, as I said to you beforehand, I'd like to change things up a little bit. I know you answer the same wrestling-related questions a lot, so we're going to talk a little bit more about pop culture and things like that today. But it does have to start out with a wrestling-centric kind of question, and that is something I've always been interested in. Is I remember hearing you say in an interview at one point that the Raven character was influenced a lot by the movie Point Break and the Patrick Swayze character. Is that accurate?
Not a lot, but nah. The concept began there because you know they were all a bunch of alternative characters.
Yeah,
and that kind of concept led me, and it was like a thoroughfare to get to where I was going to go with it. You know, it sent me in the right direction, but it wasn't. It's not that it's based on that. It's just you know the Chili Pepper guys. You know, it's kind of like saying, you know, Austin got the name Stone Cold, you know, because he was thinking serial killer.
Yeah.
But he's not a serial killer. You know what I mean? So it's an inspiration, but it's not based on that, though.
Yeah.
But it was an inspiration for the character.
What other was there any other movie characters that you kind of drew from?
I kind of made it more. It's kind of a cross between Jim Morrison and Robert Plant.
Right. Did you torture yourself by watching the Point Break remake a few years ago? Did you see that movie?
I did not.
Good for you.
and I'm pretty sure I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either. But from hearing from people and seeing reviews, like I don't know how you destroy that. You know, it was a great movie, a great '90s movie. Anyway, that's it. I'm glad you brought up Jim Morrison because I wanted to actually talk about that a little bit and see what you know how that influenced you and if you were actually a big fan of Doors music.
Yeah, I love the Doors music.
Yeah. What are your favorite songs out of their catalog? Do you like more of the early, like Light My Fire stuff, or do you go later on with LA Woman?
It's all early. I mean, they were only famous for 5 years.
Well, yeah. You know, I watched When You're Strange last night, and that's like the big summation at the end. Like, they did all that in, you know, 5 years and so many days or whatever. Robbie Krieger, the guitar player.
Was it even 5 years? I mean, was it more like 3 or 4?
65, and then he died in 71. So something like a little less than 5 years.
Yeah, but they stopped recording like in 69 or 70, right?
Yeah, 70. Yeah, and then he went to France, yeah.
And then look at Creedence Clearwater Revival. They had, what, 2 years?
Yeah, that's
John
funny.
John Fogerty made like 60 hits in 2 years.
Yeah, and then he got cheated out of the rights to CCR for a long time. I think it might even still be the case where he doesn't get the royalties.
Yeah, where if he wrote a song, he could be sued because it sounded too much like his own sound.
Yeah, how wild is that?
Crazy.
Unbelievable. So
only in America.
Of course, only in America. You know, as far as other musical influences, you know, in promos and T-shirts you would wear and stuff like that when you were, you know, the Raven character in ECW would, you know, be Pearl Jam or Alice in Chains, Nirvana. Were all those groups kind of, you know, were they on your radar? Did you draw from the bands and the lyrics and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I dug a lot of that. I like Stone Temple Pilots more than I think them the most at the time. And then Soundgarden and Alice in Chains. Those are probably, like, I'm less of a fan of Nirvana than I am of the other three.
What do you think about groups like Alice in Chains or, say, Sublime or whoever going out on the road with the band name, but the singers, you know, passed away and they bring another guy in to sing?
Well, you know, what's weird is we saw Jerry Cantrell play, me and Jericho and a bunch of the boys at some Vegas or somewhere we were staying. He was in the hotel. He was playing at the, you know, the building. And man, his voice, he sounded exactly like Layne Staley anyway.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Some of the later songs where he, or even the song Wood or then Heaven Beside You, it's a lot of, he's taking lead and then Lane's kind of the background guy or, you know, the rhythm.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's what we figured it must have been, you know, because, you know, we weren't aware of that, but.
Is there any like present day music or bands that you're really into or do you stick with, you know, the stuff that, you know, you liked in the 90s and so forth?
I don't really listen to music that much anymore. Yeah. I mean, I think most people stop listening to music at a certain point. Like, not stop listening to music, but stop listening to current music.
Right.
And I think I stopped listening to current music around the late 90s, early 2000s, because how old was I then? 2000, I was 36. So at 36 to 40, I think you started losing your interest in current music. And plus, the music was, it's not the same. Like, you can't listen to one station and hear all the varieties. You have to listen to everything so split up into different, you know, groups. Like, in the 70s, you could listen to all music on one station. Like, you know, whether it's 70s, whether it was Philly soul to disco to classic rock to top 40. It all played on like the same basic stations, you know, but by the 2000, you know, it's like one station's for classic, one station's for this, one station's for that, one station's for hip hop, one station's for soul, you know. And so you don't, you know, so it became more box. Each one became a box, you know, so you had to pick or choose. And then it just, you know, and in top 40, I think you grow tired of top 40, you know, at some point.
Is there let's start with this. What are your top?
But you know what I'm listening to though? When I'm not listening to podcasts lately I'm listening to freestyle music.
You mean like freestyle rap or freestyle like improvisational?
No, freestyle. It was electro funk.
Right.
Like the, you know, like songs like Electric Kingdom.
Yeah,
talk
yeah.
to Electric Kingdom. I forget the lyrics now, but you know, or like what's the song I've been listening to that I just bought? Hang on, let me pull it up. Don't Stop the Rock.
Yes.
That's bad. That's totally sweet. Yeah, it's, you know, no one who reminded me to listen to that was Tony Ferguson always comes out to that on UFC.
Yes.
Like to freestyle. And then I used to love freestyle. That was like my favorite style of music in the, when was it? When, the 90s, early 90s, I guess.
So what were the...
I go through phases. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I grew up on Philly soul, because I'm from Philadelphia, and then I've always, other than classic rock, I've been more of a black music fan than a white, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's entirely true.
Well, like you said, you go through phases and everything. I know,
yeah.
and I'm from the Philly area also, but, you know, when I was early teens, I went through the rap phase and all the Death Row stuff and Wu-Tang and everything, and then I found the Doors. I found, you know, went back to listen to Guns N' Roses, Zeppelin, all that kind of stuff. And you go back and forth. But like you, like I'll go back and listen to some Motown stuff or whatever anytime, you know, like I'd rather
listen to Philly soul.
Yeah.
Even like disco, man. There's a lot of great disco music, believe it or not.
A friend of mine texted me the other day. He's like, man, I could put on the 70s pop station all day long while he's driving the truck, you know, like he's like, so much of the stuff is just great.
I mean, because you could on a 70s pop station, you could play everything from you'd hear everything from Zeppelin to disco. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd hear such a wide variety, plus yacht rock.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there was such any, you know, you go 5 degrees and there was a whole other style. You know, you go 5 minutes one way and there's a whole other style playing.
So what, are, you know, you.
But you know what? You know what? Actually, I popped for the other day.
What was that?
And, I was watching Saturday Night Live, and was it BTS, the Korean boys band?
Yeah.
They were actually entertaining.
I saw the...
Whenever they have a band on SNL, I'll watch like the first 45 seconds and then get bored. But the way they... Because of they danced and they were entertaining, so they actually watched the whole their whole performance. And it was actually entertaining.
There was those guys on there recently. They're like the Led Zeppelin Total Clones. Do you know what I'm talking about? God, what are they called? But the only reason I saw them is because they did Saturday Night Live. Greta Van Fleet. You ever seen any or heard any of their stuff?
Who is the host?
Let me see if I can get that. Fleet. Rachel Brosnahan?
I think I missed that one.
I don't know who that is. Never heard of her. But so, you know, obviously.
She's the amazing Miss Maisel.
Yeah.
That's all I
know. That's what it said.
That's all I know. I mean, I know. It's amazing how you can know of people or of stuff that you have no idea what it's about.
Yeah, but you just kind of like through osmosis remembered or whatever.
Yeah.
What as we're talking music, what would you say overall, you know, through the years, or like say the top three, top five, whatever you can come up with, best concerts you've seen live?
Man, I don't know. I've seen a lot of concerts. Jethro Tull, they were amazing. Cheap Trick with UFO.
Mm.
I know, and this was back when UFO were no names. I mean, you know, nobody had heard of UFO, and they were so good that, like, that you actually, like, the first time you hear their song, you're like, wow, that's a good song, which is rare whenever you hear a song for the first time, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, if you go see a concert and you never heard the opening act, you're not going to like any of their music. But, man, like, every one of their songs was great. UFO should have been a lot bigger. And they were also the loudest band I probably ever saw. One of the worst concerts I ever saw, and I didn't even want to go anyway, was... But I went just to hang out with Sandman. Was a Quadrophenia.
Oh, really? It's no good, huh?
I hate Quadrophenia. It's a stupid album. Well, it's a stupid. You know, they just played Quadrophenia. They didn't play any other hits.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you get that, you know, bands get bigger like that. They can do those kind of shows just for that. Like Metallica will just do a Black Album concert, or you know what I mean. So the world changed overnight, and doctors, nurses, and other medical professionals immediately ran to the crisis. Since then, they've been working extra longer hours, distancing themselves from their loved ones and risking their lives to save ours. They sacrifice a lot, not just now, but all year round. Shouldn't someone be looking out for them? Figs is an amazing company who's had the backs of these awesome humans since 2013. They create ridiculously soft, modern scrubs that help healthcare workers look good, feel good, and perform at their best. And in response to COVID-19, Figs has donated over 30,000 sets of scrubs to hospitals across the country, donated $100,000 to the Frontline Responders Fund to help ship PPE and supplies, and sent hundreds of care packages to those who need it most. They've also created their own three-layer protective face mask and utilized their supply chain to produce millions of N95 masks and PPE. Figs will continue to do whatever it takes to support healthcare workers during this challenging time. But why choose Figs? Why wear Figs? Well, Figs scrubs are packed with tons of features and functionality. They've created their own proprietary fabric that features Silvador antimicrobial technology, as well as four-way stretch, moisture wicking, anti-wrinkle, and liquid repellent properties. Plus pockets. Lots of pockets. Some of their styles include over 10 pockets, which is incredibly useful when you have a stethoscope, pens, a pen light, scissors, tape, alcohol pads, etc. to carry. And Figs come in a ton of different colors and styles, from classic V-neck tops and straight leg pants to more fashion-forward collared shirts and jogger pants. Not only do they look good, they're comfortable too. Like really comfortable. Ridiculously soft, and some styles even have yoga waistbands. And they don't stop at scrubs. They also have lab coats, jackets, tote bags, compression socks, and more. Today, it's more important than ever to recognize all of the selfless medical professionals in our lives. Whether you're one of these awesome humans or you're someone who wants to say thank you with a set of scrubs, Figs has your back and is offering listeners of Creative Control Daily 15% off for a limited time. Just go to wearfigs.com, WEARFIGS.com, and enter the code CREATIVE15, CREATIVE15 at checkout and get 15% off. Take advantage of this deal. I can tell you how many texts and emails I've received from friends and listeners, from people that have taken advantage of our Figs ad. They love this stuff, man. I have a friend whose wife works in a dental office, and she was always frustrated trying to find a comfortable set of scrubs that she liked that didn't itch or bother her at work or weren't comfortable. And now all she uses is Figs. They're comfortable, they've got all the pockets you need, and you can get 15% off. Why wouldn't you take advantage of this? Go to wearfigs.com and use the code CREATIVE15, CREATIVE15, to get your 15% off. We talked movies a little bit, and one thing that interested me, I remember it from a few years ago, is that you did a little acting, and you did Death Racers with the ICP guys, and then you did another horror movie called Sleeper. How did you wind up acting? Is that something that was always kind of like in your back pocket, like that you wanted to try? And I know wrestling, of course, and has involved a lot of acting, but as far as, acting in a film.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was always in the back pocket.
Yeah.
I'd taken acting lessons back in Portland years ago just, to have the skill. Plus, I figured it'd be helpful in wrestling, which it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because acting's all, it's all good. If you watch a really good actor, even when they're not saying anything, if you watch their eyes, there's something going on. Like you can see something going on in their head, whether it's listening, what they're listening or what they're thinking. And that's, my character is a deep character. So I knew that would have helped. Well, not that I knew I was going to be that character at that time, but it definitely helped, longer later on.
I saw you tweet recently about Game of Thrones, and the latest season is getting, kind of mixed reviews. Everybody always has something to complain about. I've liked it, but what have your thoughts been so far on the first four episodes of this final season of Game of Thrones?
I thought that was the when Arya killed the Night King.
Yeah.
They milked that. I've never seen anybody milk a scene for as much as they did that. But it was great, though. It wasn't like they over-milked it, but they milked it and milked it and milked it and milked it. And then they milked it some more. And you just kept thinking, wow, when is the Night King? This is the end. This is doom. And you're like, everybody, Jon Snow's shut down. And they cut back to him, but he's still shut down. And they cut back to him, and he's still shut down. And you're like, holy shit. And you're like, man, looks like the Night King's going to win. And then finally Arya shows up, boom, but she gets shut down, and then she does the knife gimmick. Mm. But first they send Theon after him, who is getting shut down.
Yeah.
And he gets dispatched. But they just, the way they slowed time down, and they had that like one piano note they kept playing, ding, 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 like a heartbeat, like a heartbeat. Mm. And so it made it feel like it was like this heart is like this one moment is lasting forever. And that's what it felt like. And they made it, they just, the director was just had balls of steel to milk a scene that long and not have any doubt that it was going to pay off. And it did. It paid off in spades. It's the best scene, probably the best scene I've ever seen ever in a movie. Like the best single directed scene ever.
What other shows recently? I mean, what are you keeping up with? Is there anything in the past, say, handful of years that's really been like a big show that you watched and really, kept up with?
The 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, yeah. Is that still on?
No, all four seasons are over. You can watch them on Netflix. I don't get any royalties for plugging them.
Were you a big fan of the movie initially?
I liked it. I thought Brad Pitt was amazing. You pusillanimous pretend friend animals.
Yeah, it was.
And then he gave everybody the finger.
Yeah,
it was hysterical. I mean, he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Oscar. He was great in it.
Yeah,
but the movie was good, but it wasn't. It was bittersweet because of the ending. But I really liked it. But the movie, the TV show, blows it away. I mean, and they did stuff in the first season that paid off in the fourth season. Mm. Like, I mean, the continuity was so precise. Like, there's zero continuity mistakes. And for a time travel show, that's just rare, especially over four seasons. You figure at some point they're going to do something and be like, we're going to have to, where you have to gloss it over in your mind going, okay, I'm sure they meant this or, but there was no continuity errors. I mean, everything was just tight, it was just precision, time travel, plotting.
You, You worked with Marvel on a Spider-Man book, Tangled Web, and I think people, you know, are aware, you know, from your interviews and such that you're a big comic guy and kind of a voracious reader. Are you still, is there still some titles that you really keep up with? Are you reading things monthly, or do you kind of just look back and read old things from your collection?
No, I stopped reading about 6-7 years ago. Mm. When DC changed the universe for, I think, the final time, the last big time they changed it, and I was just like, man, it was one too many times. Plus, I was spending like $50 a week at the comic book store, and it was just eating up all my time trying to keep up with all the comics I wanted to read, you know, and it didn't leave me any time to read books. And plus TV was starting to get really good, so there was a lot of TV to watch. And I was just like, you know, I figured the best way to stop reading comics is to quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
And I didn't like what the DC was doing with their universe. So it felt like the perfect time.
Were you a fan of Preacher? Did you ever read Preacher?
No, I never really got into it. I read the first trade, and it just seemed like Garth Ennis was trying to be as
shocking.
As shocking for shocking's sake, you know.
There was
Again, I mean, I watched the first season of the TV series. It was pretty good, but I just didn't. There's too many other shows I was watching to stick with it.
I know I've read that, you know, obviously Watchmen was you know, a top title for you and series.
Oh, it's seminal.
What did you think of the movie?
I think I wouldn't have understood it if I hadn't read the comic.
Yeah.
I thought it was horribly done. I think they should have made it into a TV series.
Well, you know,
which they're doing now.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you looking forward to the, I mean, it's going to be different, like almost a sequel really, but it is still in that universe and with
it all depends. I mean, they did a terrible job in that movie. I mean, you know, I thought there were some cool scenes, but I thought as a whole, the movie was garbage. It was hard to understand. I mean, I knew the plot, and I had a hard time understanding it.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny because I think it's Zack Snyder or whoever. He wanted to put out an even more extended version. I think there's a Blu-ray out there. It's like 4 hours long. So he didn't.
Maybe that would have made it explain more.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened with a Superman-Batman movie, too. I haven't seen it, but I heard people that saw the extended version were like, God, it was so much better. Like, why did they, you know, trim it up and kind of ruin it? But
do you want to go behind the scenes at World Championship Wrestling and find out what really happened from one of the greatest minds in the history of the business, the infamous booker behind WCW's success with the New World Order? Other podcasts weren't there. Let's clean up the fantasy bullshit, give you real facts and real stories with the Taskmaster himself. Yes, this is Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan, available on the Creative Control Network.
I actually saw you do stand-up at Tailgaters. I think it was like 2010, and it might have been your first like loop as a stand-up. You're with Bob Levy. And,
yeah, one of my first, yeah.
So, but you're still doing it. I keep up with the podcast, with the Raven Effect and everything, so I know you still do some shows. How's that progressed for you? And, you know, was that another, again, just like I asked about the acting, is that something that you kind of had planned, or just something that one day you went, you know what, I'd like to give that a try?
I wasn't always funny. I wasn't funny at all when I was a kid, but my dad was funny, so I had to teach myself. I always wanted to be funny, but because I wasn't funny, I had to teach myself to be funny. But I could never write a joke, because writing a joke is much harder than just being funny.
Yeah.
And then one day I was, we were watching on the bus, I guess, in a European tour. We were watching, I forget his name, the British comedian. He has a horrible laugh, like the most rotten sounding laugh.
Is it Jeffries?
What's that?
Is it Jim Jeffries?
No, he's British.
I think we're thinking of the same guy, but I thought the wrong name. Yeah.
Yeah, but what is it? It's he was also in the roast battle last year. Hmm. It was the first season winner, I think. Roast battle.
Yeah.
What the hell's his name? I can't think of it. Anyway, it'll come to me. But I saw him, and I was like, I just wrote a joke after that. Really crass, you know, just really filthy joke. And because that's what he did. He had a lot of filthy material, and it opened me up. And then I wrote this filthy joke. And then after that, I just started writing jokes. And every so often, I'll write a joke, and I'll just put it on a piece of paper, or I'll put it on my phone. And next thing you know, I had about 30, 40 minutes worth. And then my first stand-up gig ever was a headliner act for 45 minutes.
Mm. About just jumping right in the deep end, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then the second and third, I think my second, third, and fourth gigs were with Bob Levy on touring with him as a middle.
But
I never really wanted to pursue it. It's always too lazy to really pursue it. So I'll do like 6-8 shows a year. This year I haven't even done any. I mean, but usually I'll do about 6-8 shows a year. And last show I did, I think, was the Jericho Jericho Cruise.
Yeah.
Or was that this year? That was last year.
Yeah, last October. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last time I performed, I think. But I don't really have any desire. I mean, it's like I wanted to do it to see if I could do it. And that's why I didn't do any stories like everybody else does. And I didn't tell any wrestling tales. I made it in 45 minutes and nonsense, just all jokes. So I wanted to prove I could write jokes, you know?
Yeah. Are you doing anything for StarCast in a couple weeks now?
Not that I know of.
So you've worked with Billy Corgan a little bit. You worked in Resistance Pro, and now we're all going to get to like a wrestling kind of question here. Because I read this while I was researching. I hadn't heard it before. When he was doing work with TNA, and it seemed like he might take over, I read that you might have come in and actually been like the head of the creative team there. Is that accurate?
No, I wouldn't have been the head of the team. I would have been involved somehow. Mm-hmm. But
and what was your experience like working with Billy when you worked for Resistance Pro?
Because that great
company
guy.
Had some
just
good
a
buzz.
Great guy.
Yeah,
very creative.
Yeah, and are you a big Smashing Pumpkins fan?
Huge Smashing Pumpkins fan.
Had you seen the reunion tour? Did you go to any of the shows?
No.
Last couple of years, or what? It was last year.
I saw him a couple of years ago in Atlanta. When he comes to Atlanta, I usually try to go see him if I'm in town.
Are you still keeping up with the DDP yoga?
Yes.
Yeah.
I also know hypnosis too. I studied hypnosis end of last year, and I can also hypnotize people too. that was the two things I started last year. That was what I decided. Like, I try to be a bit of a polymath.
Yeah.
Or a Renaissance man, but. But not too Renaissance-y, you know, because I don't want to. I like going to the Renaissance Fair, but yeah, it's a whole other matter.
Yeah,
but I try to learn stuff that interests me. Like right now, I'm learning a little bit how to play better chess.
Mm-hmm.
Still play like shit though, but yeah, last year I decided it's a long story short. I decided to learn hypnosis, and so I started going to DDPY around the same time. And I used his DDP staff as my practice dummies, and I would hypnotize the staff after doing yoga.
How do you learn to hypnotize? Is it like a book?
You have somebody else who's the hypnotist teach you. This guy who did a TED talk, Albert Nirenberg, did a TED talk on hypnosis, and I started started putting people to sleep, and I'm like, man, maybe this is real, because I always thought it was a work. And I'm like, maybe this is real, because it's a TED talk. They're pretty picky. Like, they won't even let. They won't even like. This guy on remote viewing did a TED talk, and they can't. They wouldn't let it air. They censored it. Like, so they're really picky. You know, like they censor like alternative. Thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, well, if they let this, then maybe it's real. And I still couldn't believe they censored the remote viewing guy. I mean, that's ridiculous. But anyway, so. I sent him, after I saw his TED talk, I was like, wow, this is amazing. So I sent him an email, you know, and he emailed me back because he knew who I was. Because, you know, I told him I was Raven. And because Raven sent him a letter. Scott Levy figured he wouldn't get any response.
Yeah.
But Raven figured he'd get a response.
Yeah.
So Raven sent him a letter, an email, and he responded back. And we talked for a couple hours on the phone. And he's like, you want me to give you lessons? I'm like, yeah. And man, hypnosis is 100% real. It's crazy.
Kind of makes me... That's something like I think I have a phobia about, like getting hypnotized. So,
well, I'll hypnotize you next time I see you. Then,
oh, shit, and I'll never know, right?
But, no, you would never. Yeah, you know, there's ethics. You know, you don't hypnotize anybody who doesn't want to be hypnotized.
I'm not willing. Yeah.
Yeah, and it'd be pretty. I think it'd be pretty hard to hypnotize somebody if they didn't want to be hypnotized. I mean, I think it'd be really hard because all they would have to do is get up and walk away. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, unless you had Disco just harassing you and following you around trying to hypnotize you.
So I know you said you wanted to hang and chat for about 23 minutes. I'll wrap up here so I don't keep you on your Saturday. But final question. I know, like I said, I've, you know, watched some shoots with you, read some interviews, things like that. Always kept up with what you're up to. And, you know, it's always been said, of course, about how well the relationship was when you worked with Paul Heyman back in ECW. You know, he really understood the character and everything like that. Down the line, through WCW, WWE, Impact, and everything, who do you think understood the Raven character, like, the second best? Like, who is your next favorite person to work with, Booker or creative team or whatever?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a close second. I mean, Terry Taylor had an idea. You know, Sullivan had a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they both understood that heels need heat, which is such an important aspect of any character, really. But you know, Sullivan came from a dark character's place, so he understood the basic, you know, the gist of it. But I mean, nobody got it like Paulie did.
Now you were, of course, doing the Raven Effect podcast on the Jericho Network. You moved to MLW Radio, which Keeping 100 just moved over there as well. So we're on the same team again. What was behind the change and the show changed a little bit too, right? Busby's not doing it anymore.
Yeah, he got life got in the way.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure I'm going to stay with it either.
No.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I mean, it's not the same without Busby. Right. And you know, Rich Bikini, he's really good, but he's not. It's not paying me enough money to make it worth doing something that I don't feel 100% invested in.
Right, because absolutely. And you knew Busby for years, so you guys had a chemistry, you know, with Rich. I'm assuming you didn't really know him that well, or don't know him that well, right?
Well, it's also like, I mean, he's a sports fan. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm a UFC fan. He's not. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm gonna stay with it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's good. I mean, but it's not. I'm not. I don't have enough listeners where I'm making enough money to make it worthwhile. To make it like where I'm like, hey, I want to keep making money with this.
Yeah.
So it's not that. And when I was doing it with Busby, I was proud of those things. I mean, they were funny. I think it was, you know, if that's your sensibility, that, I mean, it was a very loyal listenership. You know what I mean? And a very because it was a very unique show. But I can't do that show with anybody else.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to talk to Court Bauer this weekend and see what's what, you know. And I'm hoping maybe I can get Busby to do a Patreon only show, like, you know, because it's time, because he is so busy.
Mm-hmm.
That schedule, you know, it's hard to fit in an hour and a half every week, you know, a specific hour and a half, you know, where you can just do nothing else but that, you know. Which you would think would be pretty easy, but not with his schedule, because he teaches, you know, clowning.
Yeah.
You know, and by day he's a writer, he's a screenwriter, and by night he's a clown teacher. and in between he's got pitches and all, you know, and plus we're on different timetables because, you know, he's on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast.
Right.
So, and he's got a girlfriend, he's got to, you know, just spend time with her and a dog. And so it just, but I'm trying to get him to convince him to do like a 30-minute Patreon only show, and then we'll just keep the Patreon money coming in.
Yeah.
And forget the the ad money.
I thought
because now that we're with MLW, it's going to take 6 months to get ads anyway, you know.
Yeah, it's like starting over. And what I've learned because I put out different shows, I put out a show for Shane Helms and Animal and stuff, and it seems like the lesser known shows that I put out are easier to get ads because they're cheaper. But I have these guys on, they do decent numbers. The ads are a little more expensive, and I'm not, you know, you get a little interest here, a little interest there, but it's never like a 52 week a year ad every week. Yeah, but Patreon.
Oh, right, yeah, I want to talk to you about that as soon as we're done recording the show.
Okay. Okay, well, so that's, you know, obviously, you're, like we said, you're on MLW Radio now with the podcast, and we'll see what the future holds for that. Is there anything else you want to plug? Any dates coming up, stand-up, any conventions, anything like that?
Nah, I'm pretty much slothing the month of May.
There you go. It's a good way, good way to start the summer.
Just my Twitter, The Raven Effect.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on Creative Control. You know, I've been really lucky with some guests that I've wanted on, and to be honest, you're one of the last guys that... that I really wanted to interview, so I appreciate you.
Well, I did offer to come on a long time ago.
Yeah, I did. I missed that one time. Yeah, that is.
Yeah, but here's the thing: is I hate doing podcasts and interviews. You know, unless I'm doing it, unless I'm the star of the show. Like I hate being the interviewee.
Yeah.
Because it, like you said, you know, everybody asks you the same damn question, so it's annoying. This was great to do.
Yeah.
But I also, because you've done some favors for me in the past,
mm-hmm.
I offered to do your show a long time ago, and so, you know, it was only a matter of time before I got around to doing it.
Well, it is much appreciated, and again, keep up with Raven on Twitter, and check out, you know, The Raven Effect on MLW Radio. Thank you very much for your time. Do you love Funko products and podcasts? Well, at least one of those things if you're hearing this ad. The good news is that now you can learn about Funko exclusives, giveaways, and more with your two new best friends, Mike and Josh. You can listen to the Talkin' Pops podcast on most platforms. T-A-L-K apostrophe N-P-O-P-S. Talkin' Pops. And you can check out the Talkin' Pops podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, and more. Follow them on Twitter at TalkNPops, T-A-L-K-N-P-O-P-S. And check out their website at TalkinPops.com, T-A-L-K-N-P-O-P-S.com. If this kind of show is up your alley, these guys do a great job. That's Mike and Josh on Talkin' Pops.